Greetings, conjurers, and welcome to another episode of the Grog Pod Roguelike Podcast, where each episode we awake to a shattered universe of roguelike games, use our word spells on it, and then rank it against all the other games that we've talked about. I am your fleshy mass host of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my summoned co-host minions.
Oh, it's Colin, and my own personal summoned minions behind me, a swarm of gnomes, casting even more summoned minions.
And this is Will, the minion of the minion of Collins.
Hey, whoa. I thought we talked about this already. Sorry, fellas. I wasn't clear that I actually wrote intros for all of us. Rift Wizard. You heard of Rift Wizard? Well, it's me, Andrew Harshman, your friendly local meathead, metalhead FPS guy. And I, of course, love my heavy metal music and my riffs. It's me, Andrew Harshman, the Riff Wizard. And of course, I'm joined by Colin. He's on the slopes. He's climbing cliffs. He's the ski lift wizard. And let's not forget Scott, the master of marathons, on his bike all the time, going from here to there. It's the gear shift wizard. And last but not least, I'm talking about Will Wright, the spliff wizard, the wisest and most powerful of all.
The what? A spliff? Are you talking about mixing some cannabis with tobacco in a joint?
Yeah, that's right.
The most potent of sorceries.
Right. I mean,
that's, well, it's maybe one could argue that's alchemy, but you know,
it's whatever Gandalf is smoking.
Ooh, it's a spell.
Finds South Farthing.
It's a nature and enchantment spell. Ooh. Is what it is. But anyway, this week we're talking Rift Wizard, not Spliff Wizard, released in early access July 6th, 2020, and released it out of 1.0 September 1st, 2021. This is I believe, Steam exclusive. I don't know that this is on any, can't find it anywhere else, really. But this was made by solo dev Dylan White, a former ArenaNet, you might know from Guild Wars, developer, and a former Riot developer. It's kind of funny that ArenaNet, the developers of Guild Wars, like their main HQ is in Bellevue, and so it makes me wonder if this is yet another like developer that somehow happens to live in the Seattle area. But anyway, Rift Wizard enters the portal here on our program at the number 649th most popular roguelike game on Steam with 994 total reviews. Your average player of Rift Wizard has about 25 hours of gameplay in it. But Colin, you have one sentence to describe Rift Wizard before the evil wizard Mordred shifts you to another plane of existence.
You are a powerful wizard who has forgotten his spells. You must relearn all of your spells and fight through many floors of procedurally generated hordes of monsters. And blast things with your eventually OP spell combos.
And maybe for you. Maybe yours are OP.
Also, very much tile-based, turn-based.
Frustration-based.
8-bit theme, vibe, sound, sights, etc.
Yeah, I feel like this game has very much a early NES aesthetic to it.
Oof, boy. Barely. Which, to be clear, right at the gate, like I personally like the visible. I like the visuals, the visible visuals. I like them. But like, yeah, it is a pretty, I don't know, rudimentary is rude. Because the art does have a certain charm to it, but it's like very utilitarian.
Minimalist.
There we
Garbage.
Go. Yeah,
I think that's the word.
Oh my God. No. See, this game has made the bargain, the infernal bargain of roguelikes, where the visuals, well, we'll discuss in more depth, but the infernal bargain is, ooh, the breadth and depth of the magic system. There's so many different spells, ways to modify the spells, ways to upgrade the spells. They all do distinct, interesting things. You open up your spell book and there's like a list of all these different classifications and all this interesting stuff, but it comes at the cost of the graphics are non-existent practically. But like, I think this is a great example of how, you can achieve a lot of detail and granularity in a roguelike if you're not wasting development hours on other aspects of it.
Yeah, I really, I mean, I don't do any sort of coding, but I really like that you can just open up the files for the game and you're just like, here's the Python code for this game. It has like a separate window that opens while you're running it
Oh,
because it's like the Python script running in the
I
background.
did not catch that. I was wondering what that window was.
Yeah,
Yeah, if
if
you
you close
close
that,
a
it closes the
Luddite.
game.
I
Yeah,
didn't realize.
it's interesting from like a development perspective because not a whole lot of commercial games are made in like the programming suite of Pygame. But I feel like this one is interesting because yeah, like Colin pointed out, all the files are there. Like you just go to browse your local files and like you can just see all of, like right now I'm looking through the shrines.py file to see like this is how all the stuff like for all the shrines in the game works. And it's very interesting to see how all the code is working under the hood. And Python is a much more, I guess, upfront intelligible language than other ones. Like, for example, I've been noodling with some Caves of Cud modding because I'm a sicko. And a lot of that stuff is like based in I believe XML and C sharp. And that is a little it's a little harder, we'll say. Whereas this, it's like a lot more readable, like the descriptions are just straight up there. Like in theory, you could just like change all these values and stuff.
Yeah, I was about to say, no wonder, Colin, your builds are so OP. You're going into the damn
Yes.
Python and
Damage
set
equals 100.
999999.
Win
9,
equals yes.
9, 9, 9. Mordred equals dead. Yep.
Yeah, I also remember when this game came out, it was like everyone was jazzed about it because they're like, oh, finally, another coffee break roguelike game where it seems like we talked or there was a comment about like breadth versus depth and like how much you want to spend making art assets and all that stuff. And we've played some pretty long in the tooth games on here. Like I think Will put what like 40, 60 hours into Tome or something.
I think, yeah,
And
55 or so.
Rift
Well,
Wizard in comparison
last week,
is
Hades, I mean, you could put a lot of hours into that.
that's true. And I think that like with traditional roguelikes like these, there's like rogue games on like the shorter end of the spectrum in which Rift Wizard, Jupiter Hell, Doom RL are all in. And then ones that are kind of like on the larger, like borderline RPG end of the spectrum, Tales of Mangreal, Cogmind, maybe, that like start to skirt the definition of like, well, is it really fun if like you invest like 6 or 7 hours straight and then your character just dies from something off screen versus this, which is like, yeah, I'll gladly reroll and restart a new game almost immediately because there's so many like little toys to play with. And then the other aspect, so like game length, but the other aspect was like this enormous spell book. Like my Google Doc that I have that I'm reading through here has 19 pages of notes. I think like a full like third of that is just like screenshots of the spell book. Because there are, let's see, like 157 individual spells, ranging from things like your standard fireball, your standard summon a wolf, your standard magnetize, your standard hungry maw, to things like Sight of Blood, Volcanic Eruption, Void Drake, Soul Tax,
Mega
or.
Annihilation. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, there's a lot of great band names in here. We got Mega Annihilate, Wheel of Death,
Searing Orb.
and don't forget Wolf, which if you put
Love
them in the
that
right
name.
font, that's a pretty good band name too. Probably is a band name.
Ring of Spiders is a good band
Ring of
name.
Spiders.
Imp Swarm. Word of Ice. Spike Ball Factory.
Oh yeah. Yeah, very metal, very metal, for sure. They're obviously, new wave of American heavy metal, which is now old. So, but anyway, yeah, lots of spells. How many spells in total are there?
There's the key thing here is that there are two aspects in which you upgrade your wizard in this one. You have spells, and then you have skills, which are more kind of like background passive effects. Spells, there's like 157 of them. And then skills here, looking in my other Google Doc really quick, I think there's like 79 or 80 passive skills that you can pick up,
Yeah.
ranging
Which
from.
are on the shrines? Is that what you're referring to?
No, these are just
No.
things that like you add to your wizard over time. Things like Icy Vengeance or Shatter Shards or Ghost, like, again, all great metal band names.
Vengeance. Andrew, did you not buy any skills?
I'm sorry, what are we talking about?
Oh my goodness.
Oh no.
Skills?
If you put K while you're playing and there's skills that are just passive.
Stop the podcast. I need to go play a separate 8 hours of this game so that I can actually play it. What the hell? What?
We'll yeah, there's just a bunch of passive effects. Like, there's one that just, like, start the level with four death knights around you.
Oh my god. And how often do you get a skill?
They take skill, or they take the same SP.
Oh, interesting. All right, well, I don't feel like that big of a doofus.
Yeah, I feel like in a fair amount of my runs, I won't buy them until it's, like, realm 10 or something.
Very funny.
They're definitely a, you buy spells first, you upgrade your spells, which is the other component that there's spells, there's skills, and then there's the sub spells for each spell, which each one has like five upgrades you can do. So,
and one of the, I think this may have been a selling point initially, and I think this is probably a cause for consternation with our last couple weeks of evaluating Rift Wizard here. So maybe a kickoff point of discussion here is this spellbook too big? Because, like, you open it up and you are bamboozled with just this, like, menagerie of options, with each one laying out that, oh, this spell here is one that has a dark tag and an enchantment tag. This one has a lightning and a sorcery tag. And to some extent, you can kind of filter that list down by clicking on the names of them, or the names of, like, the different magic schools or themes to them. So, oh, I only want to see the dragon related spells. I only want to see the holy related ones. But there's still a lot to read through here.
Yeah. So that's one of the big gripes here. And there's just so many ways that you can take the. I mean, you'll find my rating is not so great overall. But, like, there's so many ways you can make this game better. And one of them is this just blatantly obvious thing, I think, is that, yeah, you have those spells, definitely have all of them. Don't make them all immediately available. The meta progression, I know that roguelike is not, that's a thing that people for some reason aspire to. I don't know why, but, like, roguelite is what you're after. You want to have a meta progression where you hide a bunch of those spells behind unlocks. And, you know, here's a game that's, you might recall, it's called Pokemon Red and Blue. When you start and you're going out there, you can find Spearows in the grass, and you can find Rattatas. And so
150
it's like,
spells, 150 Pokemon.
You can only get
level one spells when you start off. So that's,
coincidence.
That's kind of not true, because a pro meta strat that I saw was, like, as soon as you spawn into a level, so you start with one memory point and use memory points to unlock spells. You would think that, like, oh, I'm gonna buy one of those level one memory spells immediately. But if you play it right, you can spawn in an area where you can just go and, like, walk and grab a memory orb, and then you can start with a level two spell immediately.
Oh yeah, sure. Level three. I did that run once.
Is it worth it though? I feel like
no.
In most of my games, I ended up getting, like, two level one spells just so that I had something. Just
right.
You're like, you're, oh no, I'm,
what have you?
I've run out of all of my spell casts, and I just need to, like, plink four bats. I guess I'll just get Icicle. It's not waste
it's
of mana.
Probably
potion.
A better strategy to have those low tier things in your back pocket. But I think Will brings up a great point that having
that Dr. Oaks, he says, hey, pal, three Pokemon. Here you go. Pick one. He doesn't say, here's 151 Pokemon. One of them I found under a truck. One of them I traded for on the school bus, because for some reason you can't get the Tauros or whatever on red version. And it introduces them periodically. I think fundamentally that's a great point. It is, I guess, maybe a little overwhelming, but on the whole, I admire the fact that it's just a giant fuck off spell book that's just, like, stacked to the brim. And I just opened the game. Yeah, sure enough, skills been staring me in the face the whole damn time.
Well, not in the face. That's the problem.
Well,
I was thinking
about
it. Like, once if you don't remember that from, like, the 1 second intro that you skip every time,
yeah.
Or, like, I'm not sure I would have found that
Sure,
if
sure.
I hadn't known that it existed.
Well, I was trying to role play being, you know, a wizard that's lost their memory. So I just
the Rift
completely
wizard.
Disregarded the Rift wizard. No, yes. Well, in the game's defense, when you go to the menu that shows all of your learned spells and like your upgrades, there is a little thing right there that says skills. And if I had skills, they would both be appearing side by side. Anyway, yeah,
I think
a lot of spells. I don't know how else. What's a better way to do this?
I think that the bigger sin is not that it has so many spells; it's that there's not a good way to hunt for stuff.
Ooh.
Yes.
I don't know how many times it's like. So each spell has like between 2 and 7 sub tiers that or like sub upgrades that you can get once you buy it. You cannot look at those upgrades until after you buy it, which is extremely frustrating because some of them are not good until you get the like third tier upgrade. It's like, oh, this spell, if you kill something, it refunds the spell cost. So it's like, oh, instead of having 7 casts, you have unlimited casts as long as you use it right.
Sure. Like, so for example, like the wolf spell, I found this to be kind of annoying, where like the wolf spell has like, oh, things like you can like do more damage, have more health for the minions. Okay, those are pretty obvious. And then like Bloodhound summons a Bloodhound instead of wolves. What the hell's a Bloodhound? What does a Bloodhound
right,
do?
Right, it doesn't like, give you the stats for Bloodhound. Like,
right.
I don't know what a Bloodhound is. And there's a couple that there's not a very good wiki on either in the game or on the internet. And so, I mean, there's like that one guy who did some project and it's like, I just go type it in.
Yeah.
It's kind of annoying. But yeah, wow. It's like
maybe the Python code is the wiki.
Yeah, I was about to
seriously.
Yeah, there you go.
But there's some other things that I think they actually need more tags for the spells because I wanted to search for stuff that's like AOE, damage over time.
Oh,
like
sure.
I wanted like some ways to categorize them, and I wanted it to be like a little check button where it's like include spells with sub skills, like does ice damage. Like okay, that's true for many of the ice spells, but like you can get like ice bear or ice wolf. I don't know. Some of the summons get ice stuff if you upgrade them right. Or like
and you
fire
want to know
stuff.
Like oh, like that's something that I can think of ahead of time with this spell. Like oh, I want to have that in mind because otherwise your option is like click on the ice tag that's there. Scroll through the list of like 20 spells that are there, and then maybe one of the sub spells has something that synergizes question
or right? Like I'm doing a conjuration build. Okay, here's 17 different animals you can summon. Look at each one and try and figure out does it have a sub thing that does dark damage so that it synergizes with my dark conjuration build. I don't know.
Now like, there is a game.
I want to offer a counter to this. We were just talking about how this game is fast. It's encouraging you to experiment and to try different stuff. And if you die, who cares? You know, you lose 10 minutes of progress.
That's true.
Yeah, but it's also dumb to lose if you just are like, oh, I thought it did this, but it doesn't.
Or if you thought a pit was a infinitely high wall.
Yeah, that UI where I'm like there, just for the listeners, there's these things that shoot beams at you unless you're like if you're in line of sight. And I was gonna teleport to an area where it looked like it was behind walls. I couldn't move through them. They were obviously walls, right? No, they were pits, and he could see all the things could see right over the top of these pits.
Now the pits, important. The pits are very important because of one of the I think it's the Dark Passage spell. That allows you to teleport anywhere adjacent to a pit.
Metal.
Also, you can shoot spells over them.
Or the volcano. Volcano.
I feel like there are many levels where just like it's just there are no walls, there are only pits, and it.
Yeah, that's
it's
brutal.
Like, hey, look, I can shoot spells over these black voids that are very obviously not walls.
Yeah, sorry, Will. I mean, on the one hand, I did make that mistake like early in my rifting. I feel like the game does a pretty good job of teaching you it. Like the first level almost always like 50% of the time, at least it includes pits and it's very clear. Like, oh, I can just shoot across them. Like, I think it's illustrated fairly well.
Well, I think,
but in general, you're right. It's a simple UI and not everything is clear. But except for the pits, which everybody knows the pits. I mean,
and also like we're kind of glossing over the fact that Rift Wizard has a sequel, Rift Wizard 2. Some of our complaints might be addressing. We did not play Rift Wizard 2 for this episode. I think I've dabbled in it a little bit. I didn't want to play too much because otherwise I'd get confused between the two. They look and play very similar to each other.
They look almost identical.
Almost identical.
There are
some of the same sprites.
Most of the sprites are the same.
Yeah. So. But coming back to this point of information management in this game, because there's a lot of stuff in it. There's a lot of like really cool and creative stuff, but there's just a lot of stuff. And one game that that kind of like hits this just right, which stay tuned, is Path of Acra, which similarly is packed to the gills with zillions of skills and spells and stuff. But the key thing there is it does have a search box. And anything that you type into that, it will search like the text for each one of those spells and it will highlight them. So like, these are the ones that like, so for, you know, if I wanted to do something like, oh, I have a skill that does stuff with minions. Oh, I want to know all the things that are minions. Control F, minion, and then highlight all the spells that have stuff to do with minions. That's like the thing that I don't think exists in Rift
Wizard 2. Anytime in any description it says the word summon, I want to be able to just pull all of those.
And I wound up building out a way to extract from the Python code and dump into a Google Sheet a way that we can do that control effing.
And you didn't share it to us before the podcast?
I put it in the Discord. Did you not see it?
No.
Oh my gosh.
I dropped an aversion.
Saw the one where Will put like 700 spells in a.
You're welcome. Column.
Talking about information management. All right, this one's much better. As the listeners are listening in on their car, imagine a Google Doc being put into your Discord. And
we
imagine
need
Colin.
Better request access.
That's why. Yeah, I don't have access.
You shall not.
This is the best part of any podcast where everyone gets updated access to the Google. Okay, now everyone has access to it. Anyone with the link can view now. Because I sent the copy of the anyway. Yeah, so I wound up like going through the Python code and extracting all of the spells, all of the skills, and like all of like the source code text description to it. So that way, like, because I was like exactly like Colin's problem. I wanted to be like minion and be like, okay, what are all the things that have to do with minions? Because there's some stuff that like it doesn't say it in the main description. Like Void Orb, the main spell does not say anything having to do with minions. But like the upgrades have to do with minions.
Yeah.
And so that's something that like, oh, I would love to know that. And like, it's very easy for as us as like armchair critics to say, well, just do it. But, you know,
I feel like that is our right as armchair critics.
Well, hey, great news. Rift Wizard 2, you know, it's an early access. So hopefully they can add this. And I mean, generally, to be clear, I agree. This is an obvious quality of life miss. I don't know if it's, you know, if it's a huge issue. I don't think if it's a reason to say that this is worse than all the other games we've covered.
No, I think it's it's something that keeps me from. It's a point of friction.
Gotcha. And it's a barrier to learning the synergies between the spells too. I think. The descriptions are good and they're clear and concise, and it's like. Spell wolf, summon a wolf. Got it. Okay, that's pretty clear as to what it does. But like,
What does the Void Orb upgrade Red Dwarf do? It's like, I'm not gonna buy Void Orb just so I can find out that it does additional damage of fire to adjacent creatures.
Right. Yeah. So it's like it's that having to pierce the veil by spending your memory points just to figure out what does it do, and you know. So I think that there's an element there. But yeah, I think like once, and I think I've crossed that elbow mark, as it were, of like, okay, I kind of have a feel for like where the spells are, like how they interact with each other. Like I kind of know where Nightmare Aura is, like just scrolling through the list now. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to take that. But it takes some time. And I think that like, that's something that like, I think if someone's a new player and they're just totally overwhelmed by all these spells, you know, it would be nice. Your alternative, I guess, is maybe to just like focus on like one specific spell school, like only do fire or lightning spells at first and only do things that are like within that specific magic school, and then you can kind of like see, okay, well, like some other stuff keys off of that. But I think like in interviews with the developer, like he's had like that meta progression discussion with playtesters, and I think like it's gone back and forth like several times. So I think it's like it's something that I could see as like maybe a mode that like
yeah
just give I me think, a mode to like
so
lock
there is
stuff.
There is the mode. There's like a couple of those other modes that are like randomly get rid of 70% of the spells. And I think that's like a good idea. I wish that there was something that happened during the game that would let you do that and have it be somewhat more targeted. Like, get rid of all schools of magic that you don't already have a spell for in exchange for something. So it's like, okay, I only have dark, holy, and nature. Yeah. I guess that's all I'm doing now. But like for
you could like sacrifice an entire school of spells for
yeah,
some
something where
ward.
You can sacrifice complexity of your builds in order to gain some power and also decrease your cognitive workload.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting.
And then like
that's a good
scrubs like us could just be like, yeah, all right, cool. I don't need to think about all of the like various dragon and eye and orb spells.
The orb and the word spells. And
oh,
the spoopy spells. What else? Swamp spells. I'd gladly sacrifice every other school of magic. All I need is Wheel of Death, baby.
Well, I mean, okay, so this is in psychology, yeah, the paradox of choice. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Is
yes,
and for all you parents out there, that's not me, but the tip that really is tied to that is if you have like a kid and you want them to get dressed in the morning, you don't tell them to just go to their room and get, you know, choose something. You say, here's two outfits, pick one. And in the same way, slay the spire because we have to.
Well,
use
no,
that,
but so. I don't want either of those outfits, Daddy. And then they explode, and then they're weeping on the ground and just having a full meltdown because they needed the yellow shirt.
Oh, I thought you were making Rift Wizard a joke. Drift Wizard is some of the friends that we had in high school. Rift Wizard joke where like the kid explodes into a Mercury Geist
that could
and
also
lights the house on fire.
You know what? I think. That's true. That's also what I was doing.
That too.
Just turns into a seared golem.
Your actual human child explodes into a Mercury Geist.
Geist. Yeah, good stuff. So, there's a lot of spells, which Wheel of Death, OP, for the record.
Now, I will say that, like, with the bamboozling amount of options,
the
one advantage that you get out of this is what is it? Like, tech switching, like, options. Such that like if you are like okay like building up like a really dark heavy build and then all of a sudden like oh my only options are like portals in which like dark is like totally resisted and like oh this build is not going to work at all for these levels, what do I do? Well, lucky for you, sorcerer, you can just straight up take a different school of magic at any time. And then now your dark spells can redeal lightning damage on hit, for example, or redeal like waves of fire damage. Or if you're all fire and you know you come into a level that's all fire resist, but now I have a thing that ties like ice clouds to that in some interesting fashion. I feel like the paradox of choice here is interesting to debate about because, yeah, like you could very easily do like, all right, I'm going to pick this spell, and then the only things that are listed in the spell book are things that, like, strictly synergize with that. But that limits you from starting up an entire new tech tree branch, like, that's completely unrelated at any given point in time. Which I think is an interesting interesting approach. And I kept wanting to say that, like, I wanted the limitation the first few times that I was playing. But now that I've kind of, well, you know, now that I've joined the elite ranks of Mordred Slayers, I think having the option to like respec my stuff at any given point is nice. Maybe I just really want like a roguelite mode of like, okay, I've killed so many monsters or so many wizards with things. Now I've unlocked like this spell or this spell to like give me something to chase on.
I want there to be a trap for noobs where it's good for you until you get to like level 15 and then it stops being good so that it like helps you get to the like beyond a certain tier, and then once you're skilled enough that you don't need it anymore, you can move beyond it.
That's what Wheel of Death was for me almost, because I invested so much into that and I didn't realize that there was a a spell specific or a passive skill that like reduces the dark resistance. But anyway, yeah, like I think that would be cool. I think like for a large part, there's only like three of the Archmage trials that are interesting out of like the 10. There's the ones that have like the spell book, a big chunk of that removed, a big chunk of the skill book removed, and then the one where the only spell that you have is wolf summon.
Yeah, that's like, the only one I've heard people
wolf
talk
about. Mode.
Yeah, because the other ones were like, what is it? Just looking at it a second ago here, and Giant Slayer. All enemy units have 300% HP. Not interesting. Flame Fest. All enemies have 200% HP. Only fire spells. Maybe like the extra tankiness of the enemies just kind of seems.
The game's already hard. It doesn't actually need to be harder.
Flame Fest, isn't that the nickname for the Omega Bowl? Just a giant flame war between the.
We're gonna go to Fire Fest.
All right, right.
FYRE.
So, well, hey, you know, wow. There, as I said before, this game has made the Infernal Bargain, which allows it to have so many skills, so much stuff going on. It's really cool. It's good, but golly, Scott, what is the story?
Ah, yes. Well, the story in this game, and actually, I think like. This game, I was harping on, I think it was a pre-Andrew episode of Shattered Pixel Dungeon, where I was like, there's no story in this game, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm a big sour grapes about it and everything. Rift Wizard, in comparison, has a black screen with just white text on it. But I love the text here because I think it adds so much, like, flavor to this that otherwise, like, if this didn't exist here, I feel like the game would be like, you know, it's still fun. But it's like, it just adds a little bit extra spice to it. So literally like
agreed.
2 seconds into the game, click new game. You're greeted with a wall of white text from a very NES style saying, "Welcome back, wizard, to the ruins of the universe," which I'm just like, I'm 100% on board with that one sentence. You could just say that and I'd be on board. Continues, "Eons have passed while you slumbered. You have slept walk. Across many worlds, the universe, once ordered and beautiful, lies in chaos and ruin, and you as well. You were a great wizard once, but your magic and your memories have faded. Your purpose, you remember. Revenge. The dark wizard Mordred is nearby. Perhaps he is what woke you. Regain your power and slay Mordred." And then bam, you're in level one.
That is the entirety of the story of Rift Wizard.
Well, there is a little bit of stuff at the end after you beat Mordred, but I think like that is just like it's clear, it's concise. That's all I need. That's like the MVP that I need for like a story in a game. Just like set something up.
Yeah, I think this game would be strictly worse if it had more story.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think it would degrade the purity of the experience.
perhaps. And by the same point, as you said, Scott, without this intro text, I think it would be like objectively a worse game, a less enjoyable experience. Like that is that screen with like a paragraph of text is like gives you a great bit of context that really I think. Yeah, heightens the rest of the game for sure.
I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, that's all just sort of like the fluff to explain why every time you die and come back, like you have like you're learning different skills essentially. It just feels like the game was developed and then there was like a what is the story I can make to make this work instead of it being where something where they're integrated together. So I don't know. I think it's stupid.
I would have been okay if it just said you are a wizard. And then you start
go
the
forth
game.
And
right,
kill.
Or just like, what was it, Dungeons of Dreadmoor? Was that the first one we did, right? And it's just like, yeah, it's a similar thing. You're going to go kill the wizard. But it's just like, yeah, kill the, you know, make it to the bottom. Kill the bad big bad guy. Got it. I mean, I don't know. Your memory, all this stuff is like, well,
I mean,
okay.
Yeah, like it's not like we're whiplashing again, as we do so frequently here on the podcast, between Hades, a game that is quite literally like, a borderline visual novel of story to this, which is like a one screen, like 10 line thing of text. That's just like, you could click through it in 2 seconds and it wouldn't have any impact. And I feel like that's fine here. Cause like this game is not about the story. The story is just like window dressing. That's like, okay. Yeah. That's like we were just talking before hitting the record button, putting too much salt into something, and now it's completely inedible.
It's this, the like, tag that you cut off when you buy a new shirt. It's there so that you like, oh, I know how it was made. Cool. Never look at this again.
I think y'all are selling this intro short. I think it was written deliberately. I really like the flavor. I think it's neat. And I think it, if you allow yourself to use your imagination a little bit and look at this game as an abstraction of what's happening, I think it's very, very interesting. I think that intro screen gives you just enough context that can then like radiate out and kind of inform the rest of your experience.
No, I've got it now though. You're bringing up this point where, with the NES style graphics, what kind of story can you tell? When you all these other games where it's just like the last spell, like it's just like essentially images that are like panning and zooming, and it's just like and appearing on the screen. It's like nothing's really animated except for the fade in and panning, and so that worked really well. But this, like, what can you do with the NES style graphics? Well, I mean, this was written in Python, so you could do something, you know, have a matplotlib give us a beautiful graph or something, you know.
What you could do with
I do want more graphs in this game. I want like a beautiful graph of like which spells did
damage. Do you think Wheel of Death is? That's a beautiful pie chart of doom and destruction.
I think with like with this kind of aesthetic, you could pretty easily do like an intro, like fade in to just like a static screen, NES style color palette, pixel art of just like, you know, your blue wizard being like woken up by some tumultuous thing, and then the red wizard like off in the distance, something pretty easy like that.
Yeah, a couple like chick chick, and then the red wizard teleports away.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
The victory screen when you defeat Mordred just says victory. Mordred is defeated. Order and justice will soon return to the universe. Again, excellent. Exhausted, you fade from consciousness back into sleep. Perhaps this time you may dream.
Ooh.
And if it was just like some like static image of like the, you know, Mordred the Red Wizard like exploding or something, just and sure, like the blue wizard just like napping on like a pillow, like that's all like you don't need it.
Slay the Spire. Has a couple of like still images there at the end.
There you go.
Love a good still image. You do want to feel like, you know.
I actually didn't remember that that there was text at the end.
Oh,
when I beat it.
I think that's another thing you can accidentally click through.
You were
really
too
fast.
Overjoyed. Well, as I've made a point of saying that I don't like read me document victory screens. and it would be nice if there was a bespoke custom graphic, because, you know, back in the day, you know, that's all we had. Like into the end of NES game, like part of the excitement was like, oh, what new art asset is going to display at the end of this game as a reward of sorts.
What if there was like a NES box style art, you know, how they like the art for the box and the manual always yeah, like wildly out of character with the game. Sure. Like the only image in the entire game, it's just like a 90s style like animated just guy.
Animated guy. Yeah, with an artist that didn't get a very good briefing and just drawing them completely different. Yeah, well, I mean, again, you know, I would have loved to, it'd be awesome if there was a little graphic or something like you're describing, Scott. But I don't think there has to necessarily be that much more, because again, you know, the focus on this game is that big old spell book.
How about Pac-Man? Do you remember being super excited about seeing, you know, once you made it five levels, 10 levels, I don't remember these, and you're like, oh, what's going to happen next? And oh my goodness, the ghost is chasing me. And then, and so,
yeah, right. Sure. It's, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I think that would have been just fine. I don't know. I guess I'm just saying, I think that it's a very bare bones game. It didn't have to be. There's so many areas that could have been improved, and it just was not.
Well, I think like this also may have just been sort of like a tech demo playground, more or less, of just like, hey, like I have a bunch of ideas for all these cool spells. Let's just build a playground to like nuke stuff with. Sweet. Because I think the sequel, Rift Wizard 2, has kind of taken some of these ideas and polished them up a little bit. I think like the presentation layer, what I would want from like a Rift Wizard 3 is maybe a little bit more focus on like the presentation aspect. Because, like, the systems are there, like, the game plays well, but, like, you know, the difference between, like, NES games that have, like, you know, zero or like extremely minimalistic art and flavor or animation to them that still play really well. But like, I think those are enhanced and made better by those investments into that kind of animation art style. Like, I'm thinking like the difference between like NES Contra 1 and SNES Contra 3. Like, two, like, they both play like, you know, tough as nails. You know exactly what you're getting for. I'm not exactly saying that Rift Wizard 3 needs to be a Contra 3 level of like animation and investment, but like, there's stuff about that I feel like this game and series would be well served by. Even stuff that like on our previous episode, Sheer and the Wanderer, there's like little like breaks in the combat. Well, I don't know, like I said that and then now I'm like, but this game is so fast, like that would just interrupt it anyway.
Perhaps
I think we need to talk about some of the enemies.
Yeah, sure. Oh, this game has some great enemies.
Including
well, I felt like I was cutting you off.
Well, classic,
obviously,
oh, yeah.
The ghost frog.
No.
You got the ghost frog. You got every type of dragon you can think of. You got hydras, you got tiny bats, you got big bats. No, but seriously, there are like some interesting kind of unique fantasy monsters that aren't like super copy paste from other sources, like the Mercury Geist we mentioned earlier. Like, I thought that was kind of cool and novel. And the game's full of like cool and novel characters, including satyrs that are carrying around, based on the pixel art, martini glasses, as far as I can tell.
I thought they were wine glasses, but
that makes more sense.
I do like the idea, like the very minimalistic art here, I think works with like the charm of the enemies, because like, you only have, I don't know, maybe like 40 pixels to work with or something and like 2 frames of animation. But like, they just look all so silly between like, even just like your base, like there's one called the Green Mush Boom that is a mushroom with a mean looking face on it that spills like poison spores that I hate the poison system. But like giant spiders, troublers, evil fairies, you just got straight up vampires, polar bears, phase spiders, blood bears, bone shamblers, minotaurs, giant toad, false prophet, mind devourer, glass golem, ice worm with a Y. You got your Draco Lich, your Titan. Oh my god, how could I forget the Titan? Floating eye mass, gold skull, Twilight Knight, all over the, like, cockatrice.
One more. I mean, there's all these cool enemy spellcasters too. You got liches, you got fire mages, you got swamp hags, you
bird
got
wizard.
Don't forget the avian wizard, which I misread initially.
Bird,
I was like,
uh-oh,
I don't know about this game. I kid, of course. There was a certain point in one run that I was doing where I was literally just picking portals based on like what enemies were in it. I'm like, oh, that sounds like a fun, cool thematic fight. Let's go. Like, I want to duel this pyromancer on a cliff.
One that I fought was, so like, as you progress through the middle game part of this, you'll be encountering like elites, and then like, yeah, actual like Mordred is not your only sorcerer wizard that you're fighting other wizards throughout the game, which are like very interesting and cool, like the Twilight Seer, who is a living, dark and holy enemy unit, and all the sprite work for them is really fun and cool, because they look very thematically similar but different than your little blue wizard guy, and they have like all of like the same spells that you do, and like all the same passives and things that like, oh shit, this is like a straight up like 1v1 wizard battle, and like, will my army of summoned skeletons like beat his army of summoned hellhounds or something?
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about. This game is full of these cool situations where like, if you take a minute to like to slow down and look at the screen and go, okay, what is being expressed, let's think about what's actually happening in game, it's like really cool. Yeah, these two warring armies crashing against each other, it's like a Magic the Gathering duel. It's sick as hell. But I do have a question. What the hell's a troubler? It's like a floating egg that teleports you.
It's an egg that teleports you. It's very troubling.
Very
and
troublesome.
And it's got a face on it too, right?
Yeah, it's also really annoying to fight. It's like,
full of trouble.
Get close to you.
Full of trouble.
I think the creativity with some of the enemies here, I'm kind of fumbling the ball with, like,
I like how there's little details like where, like, the werewolves, when you defeat them, they turn back into a naked man, just a naked scraggly man, like Homer Simpson from that Sasquatch episode, and like goes running off. Or same thing like the orcs, you know, the orcs are riding on boars, and of course you kill the orc, but then the boars is
I don't
loose.
Think any individual enemy has like a is like, oh wow, that's so creative. But I do think that like the breadth of things that they can do and the number of enemies and how they're all kind of how it changes how you play each level when you combine them in different things. Like, there have been so many times where we're like, okay, I need to look at these two portals very closely to try and figure out like how is this going to work? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I enjoyed like the variety of the enemies, because like there's some times where it's like, oh, this enemy by itself, not a big deal. But like the combinatorics of it plus this other thing that'll be healing it is going to make this an impossible level for my current build. And like how, like understanding how all of the elements of your build interact with the elements of each realm is really, I think that's what makes the enemies the interesting. It's like,
yeah,
how
no,
they,
you're totally right. They combine into
the gears together.
Totally, totally. Yeah.
With level design as well, too, because like some levels can be like very like heavily choke pointed in with like very lots of like narrow hallways. Some of them can just be big flat open arenas with lots of chasms. And I remember having this one like very tense battle with Kronos, Titan Immortal, who is a fire living holy unit with 1200 HP, does 35 physical damage for melee, and he shoots 7 range fireballs that have a 6 radius explosion. And he gets, and he has like a 1 life to him too. So you have to kill him twice. And I was running through this. I'm like, oh, well, obviously I will just like death roulette him from across the map until I ran out of spells for it. And then I had to like run up and like get up within his like fire aura and take damage and like drop mega annihilates on him before I died from proximity fire damage. And it was like super intense. And I'm like, oh my God, do I need to like figure out how to go and like pick up one of the memory orbs beforehand and pick up like a different spell to nuke him with? Like that I felt was like a super interesting and fun experience that like, yeah, like you don't get in any other kind of game of this style.
For sure. For sure. And to the point I was, you know, have been making throughout the episode, if a bunch of time had been spent making this game pretty, I don't know if necessarily we would have gotten those cool, interesting battles like that. And yeah, Colin, you're so right that like in addition to there being a lot of depth to the spells, there's a lot of enemy variety, and yeah, this leads to there being gotta be 150 Pokemon. All this leads to like the game being full of interesting choices and analysis. Like every level, you have to choose which portal you're going to go to next, and you're analyzing. Okay, you get a preview of the next you can go into the portal and see what you'll be up against. So you get a preview of the rewards. You're analyzing like, okay, how am I going to use these rewards? Oh, is there a shrine? Do I want to upgrade something? All right, now let's take a look at the level layout. All right, now let's take a look at the level, like what monsters are contained within. And I think there's a lot going on, and it leads to interesting opportunities for you to strategize.
There are 150 enemies, Volcano Turtle, Red Fiend, Elf Lightning Lord, Mind Devourer, Ghost Mass. But yeah, I think
are there any Brain Gorgers?
Let's control F for
original
brain.
Idea. Do not
steal.
No,
there's no brain related. How about Gorge?
Oh, that's a big
green,
miss.
A green Gorgon, but it's not a Gorgon. Anyway,
I got a list of 180 in my personal list of creatures. And, I'd be interested to know what the overlap
is. Brain Pokemon?
There has
like,
to
is there
be
a Pokemon
point.
That's
there's
just
like,
a brain that's floating around?
There's like 5,000 Pokemon now. So
I know, that's
be.
What I'm saying. Like, I'm curious. Have they gotten to the point where they're making brain Pokemon? I know they made like keys and swords and shit, so.
Ditto kind of looks like a brain.
No, it doesn't. Ditto looks like a ball of Play-Doh.
Neuropod?
I mean, he's like the right color.
I'm asking Claude.
He's the smoothest of smooth brains.
Represents.
But I think we should probably talk about the final boss battle with Mordred,
which I did not make it to. I think we only have two Mordred slaying champions.
Yeah,
Mordred slaying Chads over here.
I put 25 hours into this game and I only made it to Mordred once.
Whoa. Yeah, I think
it's not an easy game.
It's not an easy game. Well, depending on which speedrun video that you're watching, where people are just like,
well, yeah,
everything
on
the map.
You can't compare yourself to speedrunners.
I've tried once. And
they are terrible. Certainly they are certainly fun videos to watch. But the final Mordred fight is certainly interesting from the aspect that like you drop into his arena and you're like, oh, well, it's just one guy. I can take out one guy and like a handful of mobs. Until you realize that you have to kill Mordred, what is it, like 5 or 6 times?
You have to kill him 7 times.
7 times. And throughout the process, like, you have to not only deal with his spells, but you have to deal with him using planar interposition every 13 turns, which changes up the arena layout.
Ooh.
Including like removing some aspects, keeping some aspects the same, but like if you have like a bunch of summons on the map, like they could fall into pits, they could be replaced with walls, like enemies, it's like the enemies will be refreshed, there will be like different items on the map, there will be more spell orbs for you to pick up if you can make it that far, but you got 11 turns before he switches it up again. So it's like you are in this like wizard battle where like reality is crumbling. Wow. And you have to like kill him before he can like keep resummoning new realities of new monsters for you to fight, which I thought was super fun and interesting. And I thought that like it was like super down to the wire for me. Again, I didn't have like the best, I thought I had like an okay build going, and I was actually impressed that I had made it that far. And I thought, okay, well, if I die here, that's fine, whatever. I'm just playing with house money at this point. But I beat him with like the last Mega Annihilate spell.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't even that. I'd run out of Mega Annihilates. And I was relying
on Magic Missile.
No, I was relying on the Soul Harvest passive skill that whenever an enemy dies from dark damage, it has a 30% chance to refresh that spell.
Oh, so you were just like hoping it was gonna refresh your spell so you could use them again?
Yeah, and I basically had to like key off of the fact that I like needed him to refresh the arena so I had more mobs to like
to kill so you
to
could
nuke so I could do damage to him.
Ooh,
that's wild.
Because I can never get close enough to him to use my magic missile on him. I wish I had.
I did think that was the one. I really liked the Mordred fight. I thought it was really interesting. I thought it did feel thematic. I feel like that's the only other part of the game that felt like it had story related stuff where it's like, oh, he's summoning new existences around you to like defend himself. But I did find his specific spell where he like swaps spots with you or like teleports you across the map to be really annoying because it was hard to get close to him.
Right. Yeah. I think if you had
the build,
you'd be hosed.
Yeah. I had a build that didn't really matter. But like, if you were just like, I just need to get close to you to do anything, it'd be maybe not a hard counter, but it'd be a pretty good counter against that build, which would have worked for the rest of the game.
Right.
For sure.
But
now I haven't seen the Mordred sprite. I'm looking it up right now.
He's a red wizard.
I'm going to do a live review. He's literally just yours. You're right. It's just
he's just your sprite, but red.
That's awesome. How delightful. How charming. One person did all the art, right? The art and the music?
Yes.
I believe
it was done by
yes.
one person, but the game was designed by another person. Is that
yes.
is that correct?
But I'll
what a dynamic duo. Fantastic.
Yeah. I feel like this rounds up to a solo dev effort enough.
Sure.
But yeah, I think
suppose.
That like even just looking at the like the screenshot that I have here of the Mordred fight, where like there's just like tons of walls and like floor tiles. Like it looks good to look at, and there's like not a whole lot of complexity to the walls or anything, but like there's a certain amount of charm in its simplicity that, yeah, like if it was like up to like Super Nintendo graphics, it would be different. I don't know if it would be better, But
it would be better.
Like, I think it's I was looking at some NES games. Perhaps. I think it's somewhere in the in between. It's got more colors than an actual NES game.
Oh,
I
right.
Think we
Color
forget
palette,
how bad they look. But
True.
I'm not sure. So I was thinking about this while I was playing the game. There's a lot of information being shown on one screen.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be hard to physically fit all of the stuff that's on the screen if there was more visualization? Like, I don't know. Like, based off, I'm just looking at the sprites and they're very small. I don't know if you could make them look that much better just without
I can answer that
invisibly
question.
Small.
I don't know. I didn't even think about this until like today, basically. When I launch Rift Wizard, it takes up about half the screen, and I never bothered trying to change that. It's literally just half. And I was like, oh yeah, maybe I should like try to full screen this. Oh well. Mm. And I think it's a setting on my monitor. So yeah, I think you could, but I get what you're saying. Like, especially late game, like there's a lot happening. There's a lot happening. And arguably the graphics that is perhaps a benefit of the graphics it's able to streamline something that's extremely well populated.
Don't get me wrong, I think that you could make a game that looks better than this and have it play the same.
But I think this is potentially a soft strength of sorts.
Let's talk about the music.
How about that music? What do you have to say about the music?
I know Will didn't listen to it at all because he turns off music immediately.
The music, very, very much singular. It's mostly one track.
The music.
Again, like, because this game's all of its assets are like freely available to look at in the game. I'm just browsing here.
Could I just add more music in there?
Well, you could, but in theory, I think you would have to like change up the source code to cycle through different tracks as well.
Oh, I could just make one really long song.
Yeah. Like you make one really long song.
Or import an episode
then
of this podcast and enjoy the Grog Pod.
But there's a number of different tracks in here. You might think it was only just, I only thought it was just one. There's eight different ones.
No, there's definitely more than one song. But
wait, really? I thought one of the tracks was like 30 minutes long, 20, 30 minutes long, and then the rest were just kind of... Maybe I was looking at the wrong band camp. Never mind. Anyway, do continue.
Now, Battle 2 is 21 minutes long. Battle 1, like the title theme, is like 4 minutes long.
I see.
And I do appreciate that the final boss fight theme is different.
Ooh.
Yes, I liked that. I mean, that's good.
Hey, listen up, developers out there. There's so many games where we've talked about where it's like, and you get to the end of this roguelike cycle, and the final encounter is a non-event, and like that's just not acceptable. Like, here a solo dev with a very simplistic, you know, straightforward, simple graphics was able to make a bespoke, interesting, and wildly exciting final encounter, and little touches like, oh, there's unique music, goes a long way.
There's three songs, and ooh, two of and one of those is the Mordred song. So there's right, two songs.
Awesome, awesome. But enough about us talking about the logistics. What do we think of the actual music? I think it's pretty good. It's like a dungeon synth type soundtrack. I like it. That being said, I didn't listen to it the whole time. That's for sure.
I did listen to it the whole time. And I think that this is not... I think this is relevant. I think it's good, but I think there needs to be more songs.
More variety.
Like, even if it was just the same style, but mm-hmm, four songs.
Yeah.
Again, this is something that Rift Wizard 2, I think, adds more music to it. There's, I don't think Rift Wizard 2 has a whole lot more, but it is more.
There's a lot of time you spend just staring at spells where I'm not being distracted by anything except for trying to figure out the combinatorics of various nature, fire, arcane synergies, and it's the one song going over and over again, which is like, it can get a little bit
grating. Sure,
yeah,
okay, a little bit grating. All right, okay.
I don't know.
Well,
I feel
it's
like
good, but it fits really well. So it's I'm a little bit torn on the music.
Yeah, sure. I think I agree. I think it's good. It gets repetitive, but it's like, it's just like backgroundy enough that I can kind of tune it out.
Yeah,
and for, I think sure, for the most part, like, playing this on the Steam Deck, A, you can play it on the Steam Deck. It takes a little bit of tweaking to get it just right, but surprisingly quite playable. And yeah, I think like for the most part, I just had it muted just because otherwise the music could just be like playing on a loop in the living room. And then I'm sure I would get like a pillow thrown at me or something. But yeah, I thought it was fine, like good generic background music to just kind of like zone out to some degree. And then like that final boss fight theme hits and the music switches. And you're like, oh shit, like gamer mode innate, like engage, lean in 20%. And you're like, all right, I have to focus here. The music, like everything is so different.
Sure. Well, let me tell you real quick about my music experience with this game. And I would recommend not to take away from, you know, the fine work that the musician did on this game. I have a soft spot for Dungeon Synth. This is definitely part of that school of magic. And like, I like it. I like that the music is in the game, and I like that it's not too, it's not really, it is kind of atmospheric, and it's kind of droning, and that's good, so that it's not grating and you're not like hearing the same like very distinct melody over and over and over again, which can get really maddening. But most of the time I was playing this game, like I entreat everyone to sit down with this and put on a really good like black metal or death metal album, fire up some Emperor, fire up some Bathory.
Just go download the soundtrack of The Last Spell.
Maybe, but that would work potentially as well. But like some, and if it's thematically appropriate, like great. If the song track is like, oh, the pyromancer's wrought will upon the ancient battle side or something like, then the more Norwegian accents, the better. And like you just kind of like, you know, sort of zone out a little bit. You let your imagination go wild. You really start kind of analyzing what's happening and on the screen, and you're gonna have like a good epic time, and you're gonna go on a fantasy adventure the likes of which you haven't seen before.
Look up some background music from Choir of Angels, Combust Poison, Death Chill, Basilisk
All my
Armor,
favorite.
Ether Swap, Amplify Venom, Toxic Spores,
Mega Annihilate.
Scott is naming off my Spotify Wrapped list. Will, I'm curious, you what you were listening to when you were playing Rift Wizard, because you famously almost always mute the game and listen to, like, were you listening to NPR or something?
No. In this case, actually, I did not mute the music. I just turned it way down and I didn't listen to anything.
you
listened to silence rather than
you brute forced it.
I would prefer silence.
But did you mute the sound effects, which are chunky and charming, and I love them?
I did not mute the sound effects. I found them to be
inoffensive.
I would use the word sufficient, but I just have such a negative perception overall that I can't use that word.
Adequate.
Oh, boy. Oh no. You're being a real spoil sport. It'd be a real Mordred over here.
Well, yeah. I think
Mordred is actually the good guy. You're presented like, I mean, there's a
yeah.
twist. There you go. This whole time, your memory's coming back to you. You were actually the evil thing they tried to put away, and now you're coming back. And you're okay. You know,
I like this theory.
Are you saying
wizard? Go on.
Are you saying the wizard that has invested into Word of Madness is not the good guy?
Well, Nightmare Aura, and who every couple of hours summons a horde of like flaming bat monsters.
Mordred's actually trying to run away from you.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
never that's... trying to kill you. He's like, please go away.
Come back, Mordred. You need to listen to this CD I just burned from Imp Swarm.
Imp Swarm. Yep, there you go.
Dragon with roar.
Many umlauts.
Yeah, I think like the sound effects, again, like the NES style aesthetic here is either going to be your thing or not, and that's fine. But I think like for how like chunky it is, I think it just nails the vibe like perfectly. Like the little steps you make as the wizard, like or like the big monsters like ka-chunk, ka-chunk, like just sound so good and have their place. And then especially like once you clear out the level and you hit that like pick up everything on the level automatically button, and then it just goes skitter 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 boop, skitter 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 boop, skitter skitter skitter. It feels so
that the skittering is outstanding. Yeah. That's going to be the door prize for this game when we get to the Omega Bolt. Yeah, love it.
But yeah, I guess like Rift Wizard 2 stuff, I think like if we ever cover Rift Wizard 2, it would probably be like bundled with like, and here's like some other games that are basically the same game, but just like sequelized versions. Does a few things like very differently. Like the aesthetic is still all the same, but like there's an equipment system in Rift Wizard 2 with like randomized
Cool.
items and scrolls and things that you pick up that you can get spells that way. Multi-tile monsters, which
Whoa.
look pretty dope. New wizard variants to fight. There's proc gen monster variants that like instead of fighting
Oh.
like a bone knight of this kind, and then like, oh, it's the bone knight again. You fought ogres, but had you fought fey ogres, lich ogres, burning ogres, were ogres? So
Oh, cool. All right.
that
Sure.
kind of
So
mix
there's
up
like
there.
a little randomization table. So you get
Yeah.
some fun variants. That's cool.
A big one is that health and spell points are fully recharged at the end of every level, but there's way fewer potions to refill them. It's harder to come by like the memory points throughout the game. So that forces a little bit more creativity instead of just being like, oh, I'm gonna bank up a whole bunch of stuff and then like go ham with the spells. Spell upgrades are more powerful but limited to one per spell, I think is kind of a big one. And then another big one, free portal rerolls at the end of each stage, but you're only limited to one of them.
Yeah, I was watching a Let's. I
Sounds
haven't
good.
played it yet, but I watched a little bit of a Let's Play while I was eating dinner tonight, and it seems like it is Rift Wizard Attempt 2. Like,
Yeah.
it's. I appreciate that he's like, okay, I got to a pretty good stable game. Rather than changing this game that I've made dramatically, I'm going to make a second version of it, and it's pretty much just going to be me continuing to develop that first game. People who like the other one can keep playing that. People who like the, it's like two versions of the same game,
Two
with slightly
branches.
different,
Interesting.
with slightly different development priorities.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that, and something that you can only do with a very simple game where you can
Right.
like modify it quickly and easily.
Agile in action, folks. What do we think of the controls? I think this game controls like beautifully. Like most games that look like this are a pain in the butt. Like Cataclysm, get out of here. Come on, give me a break. But like the mouse controls, pretty solid. Just
Yeah,
having
pretty good.
all the hotkeys and everything, boom, 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 boom. You get into this great rhythm. I think it's really good.
Yeah, I think this game excels because of its simplicity. Like something like Cataclysm Dark Days Ahead, which is just, as we've discussed, a menu simulator. This is like,
Scott has his hands over his face, covering his eyes. Oh, Cataclysm. Oh.
Yeah, when you're listening out there, whenever you hear Scott's like voice change, it's because he's focusing his breath into the mic when he's putting his hands over his face.
He's just ripping, just pulling his skull.
Cataclysm Dark Days Ahead is my personal nightmare aura. But anyway, I think that
Hey.
like the traditional roguelikes that try to go too deep into the end of like hunger systems, exploration of huge dungeons, like giant overworlds and like 60-hour RPGs, like there's so much more going on, and you have to have a hotkey for putting the glove on your left hand, a hotkey for putting the glove on your right hand. It just becomes way too much. And I think that games like Rift Wizard or Jupiter Hell or Doomrl are just like, look, the and I think Andrew hit on this earlier, like we only have so much like time and budget to like spend making this thing. What if instead of like making this game like 60 hours long, we made it half as long but twice as good, or like twice as focused or something? And I feel like with Rift Wizard, it just hits that on the mark so well. Like everything is so fast that like, yeah, being able to like 1 through 6 on the keyboard to just like rattle off these spells, and then like just like mouse clicking, like you wouldn't think that that would be a big deal for traditional roguelike games. But yeah, like I would like to click go here, please, instead of having to like press the L key and then like up and up, down, left, right to like move to the th like the cursor to the thing, and then hit enter. Like it's like mouse support is something I feel like needs to be standard in traditional roguelike games.
And
It's not
specifically, the
always.
mouse support in this game like works very well. Hey, did you all know that there's a instant death button?
What?
If you have a cat and your cat comes over and puts its paw on number 5 on the numpad, then just brrr, it just speeds through a bunch of rounds and you die. It's pretty cool. I started playing the game with both hands on the keyboard and I realized, oh wait, like these mouse controls are actually like solid. Incredible. Wow, good job.
And you had asked, Andrew, I think, about like, is this even playable on the Steam Deck?
Yeah,
like,
I assumed it wasn't.
Yeah, like, I mean, it says it's unsupported, which is true, but the power of the Steam Deck and being able to like map the 1 through 0 numbers to like a radial menu,
yeah,
and then just like thumb up, it's like almost like a joystick. You're just like, you know, thumbing up to 1 to like highlight your magic missile, and then you're using the right trackpad to like mouse over and then just like pull the right trigger to mouse click. It feels really good. Like I played most of this on the Steam Deck and it felt really good.
All right, Steam port, here we come. Switch port. Coming to
could
Switch 2. Switch 2 launch title.
Could you play it on a phone?
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be too small. I don't think you'd be able to like visually understand what was going on.
I think you're right. It would be kind of fun though if there was a just like a separate mobile version, but I don't know. They've got bigger fish to fry, these devs. Hey, I have a question for everyone. So you're moving around, you're taking turns. It's of course, you know, the classic standard meaty roguelike situation, move around on a grid. What's the turns? What time scale do y'all imagine this game moving at?
Because D&D is what?
Every
2 minutes per turn or something in combat?
Whoa,
or something
hold
weird.
On.
Six
I'm
seconds.
We're going to edit that out. Scott, come on. Look, we're a serious podcast. We play tabletop games.
Not all of us. Let's not get carried away.
Okay, all right. Sorry about that. Statistics are
the majority of us.
Game. Scott misspoke. Yeah, it's 6 seconds per round. But specifically, I'm curious, in this game, every time you move a tile, like how long do you imagine that taking?
I feel like six seconds sounds about right, maybe. Because like each tile being about the size, well, I guess, I don't know how big these tiles are. Because if one tile can fit like a floating eyeball and one tile can also fit Kronos Titan Immortal, then...
Bit of streamlining.
The real answer is I don't think about it.
You don't think about it. Well, I spent a long time thinking about it. And I mentioned Magic the Gathering earlier, and I like to think of it. I think it's important, in fact, dare I say it, at least important for me, to think about it like each turn, like that is at the shortest, at minimum, it's like 15 minutes, if not like a day. Like I'm imagining these giant, epic, like... spanning like potentially, you know, week spanning, month spanning, century spanning campaigns of like wizard versus wizard. And I don't know, the question occurred to me, and I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know, that's kind of fun to think that like, oh, each move is like an hour or something, so like this wizard battle is just going on and on and on. Personal thing. I'd be curious to know what the dev thinks.
A wolf jumps and it goes 4 spaces in one turn if it has pounce. It has to be in real time, basically.
Well, to be clear, I think there's some abstraction happening, obviously, the way that I'm perceiving it. And like every time something does damage to another thing, what's happening in game, like in the reality of the game, is like that's a whole skirmish. It's not like one individual bite or one individual pounce. Like I'm imagining it as these grand engagements. And
that's the joy of simple games. We can imagine it differently.
Exactly. No, exactly. But I was just.
It's like reading a book. Like, we don't have to imagine the same thing.
That's right. Thank you. Andrew, you can imagine whatever you want. This is true. You can customize your own taste. But I was legitimately curious how y'all were perceiving it. And I'd be curious to know what the dev thinks. But anyway.
Well, then, it's about that time.
Another thing that takes place in a turn-based order, reviews.
Andrew, do you want your turn to be first?
I don't know. Let's start with.
Kind of like to dole them out in a certain order. Is that right?
Well, there's no set format for this, but I think ending on a high note is always a good way to do it. But
I think the opposite is better. Have you ever considered doing the opposite?
We should end on the objectively correct opinion, which is hard to find out because it's
always
not actually objective.
I nominate myself. Okay, so check it out. Let's start it off on a tragic note. Hey, check it out. Rift Wizard is the name of the game that we are covering. Pardon me. if this was an actual like proper roguelike podcast and we were like reviewing true roguelikes, like this is top five easy, maybe top three. Like it's a breeze to play. I was putting off playing this game because I thought like, oh, it's going to be a long, annoying tutorial. I'm going to have to memorize a million key bindings. It's going to stink. I am so not looking forward to the tutorial. Wrong. I sat down. Now, I did miss the fact that there were skills. But I sat down and like I was playing and enjoying the game within like minutes. And it's like, you know, easy to play, difficult to master, et cetera, et cetera. Again, like just the amount of stuff in this game, because they didn't waste a bunch of time and they were able to invest it in the amount of spells and the amount of monsters and the level of randomization, lots of great meaningful randomization, led to all of these awesome, cool things happening that I enjoyed. If you stop to kind of, you know, smell the roses and think about it a little bit. There was a period of time where like I was having this like battle over this like swamp realm, like a swamp hag, and she had like a, you know, this army. She was summoning all this army of like fungus beasts, like mushrooms and shit, and I had my giant army of spiders, and slowly as I would take over the map, like more and more, you know, webs were spreading, and like it was super cool. And then it, you know, ended with me and her facing off in the middle of the swamp casting spells at each other, but oh, she's resistant to that or resistant to this, and I gotta switch tactics, and like just, you know, cool stuff going on. I hate to do it to this game, but like I gave it like a 6.4, which is like number 19. Like, what a tragedy. This game is really fun. This game is really cool. It's $8. Like, you should play it, and I'm confident you will enjoy it. If you take a little time with it. So yeah, up next we have
Go for Will.
It's a 6.4, or no, sorry, that you that's what you just I give it a 6. I don't do the point. I don't have that level of precision to be able to give it a decimal. It's 6 out of 10. That puts it right next to Enter the Gungeon and The Last Spell. Game's Baron.
Wow, great company.
Six, yes. So 6 is my bear. That's the cutoff for like, would I say you should play this game? Well, if you're stuck on a desert island by yourself and you got no other game, then yeah, is it, you could, you know, you could play with some crabs, or you can play, I'd say, you know, maybe you play this game. I don't know.
It's better than no game at all.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, I'll turn off music. If music is, silence is better than music in a lot of cases. And so, I'll just add that. What do we have here? Yeah, making it so there's a meta progression, so making it a rogue light and having a meta progression, making it so there's a reprieve, sort of a camp area where it's not just constant fight. I feel like that's a everyone does that nowadays because people like that. It's more fun. Gradually introducing enemies, so not all of them available at once, but like unlocks there, like maybe once you use a spell a certain number of times, you unlock another spell, and so that way there's sort of a skill tree where you're actually selecting the direction you want to go, Diablo style. Like, oh my goodness, there's just so many ways that you can make this game better. It's got some good mechanics, but it just needs to have where's the rest of the game. And SNES is also the minimum of graphics that I will tolerate. This is like Cogmine. It's not quite Cogmine. That actually is the bottom shelf of bottom shelves. So 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10.
I'll go next. I disagree with Will. I think adding roguelike or roguelite elements, meta progression, would take away from the pure, compressed, tiny gem of game that this is. I think that it succeeds in being a very pure experience. It does not have story. It does not have meta progression. It is exactly what it is. And you get your joy out of grinding your way through understanding how the game works and getting better at it. There's a fair number of things that I didn't love about the game, but I think that all of them are distractions and things that you can kind of like work your way through. I gave it an 8.4. I really liked this game. I liked it more than I expected. I'm usually a little bit wary of games that are like, look how many spells we have. Like, more spells is usually, if you're advertising how many spells you have, that's a red flag. Because usually it's just like overwhelming. And despite being a little bit difficult to figure out how everything worked, I didn't find it to be truly overwhelming. I found it to be enjoyable to try and figure out how to synergize stuff. Once I beat it the one time, I haven't tried to use the same strategy to beat it again because it's like, oh, I want to see if I can do it a different way. And I like that it's really fast. It's like you can really like crank through a run without feeling like you've lost anything if you lost. I had a really good, like, I want to play another run. I'm jonesing to play it again. So yeah, I quite enjoyed it. 8.4.
Well, I guess that's going to leave me. I feel like my rating sounds like I didn't like this game as much. I think I did like this game, but to be clear, I do like this game. I think some of the information overload is kind of a barrier for new players. But once you turn that corner, I think you're in for something special. So I'm going to give it a 7.8, which ties it with Luck Be a Landlord and Against the Storm. Other games that I think are also like lots of synergies going on, kind of a lot of stuff happening all at once. Maybe like Luck Be a Landlord does a great job with visual presentation. But I think I like the idea of what Rift Wizard is doing. Like, I don't know. I think they solve kind of different problems. Anyway, Rift Wizard, great art design. I think the pixel art is really clear, concise. I think it's good to look at. I think the monster art is very charming and cute. The music, I think, is good, kind of like thinky background music that doesn't kind of... it never felt annoying to me. But I think like it just kind of like was a good background drone. Excellent boss fight for the final boss fight. Felt like a very like this is what I wanted from Into the Breach for a final boss fight. Something that like felt like a climactic battle of titans as like reality's crumbling around you. I think this one just like nailed it. So I think another nit that I have is that like the verbiage in Rift Wizard is kind of like when board games get too complicated and it's like, well, actually, there's an exception for this and an exception for that. And this doesn't work under these circumstances, I think is probably like a hard problem to solve, but is probably solvable, where there were a number of times where I picked up like spell shrines and things thinking, aha, this is going to add poison damage to my minions. Oh, but it didn't because I didn't actually directly summon them. They were summoned as a result of something. So
yep,
there's
they were raised. They were same. Raised as skeletons,
oh,
not
yes, of
summoned.
Course. Of course, raised versus summoned. This has got to be a nightmare to port to other languages. But I think given those critiques, I think this game does what it does really well. And I'm glad that there is a sequel, because now that I've beaten Rift Wizard 1, I'm like itching to like jump into Rift Wizard 2, be like, okay, let's do it. Let's see what this other one has to offer. Which after 25 hours, you think I would get bored of it, but... yeah, I'm certainly jonesing for more. 7.8 for me. That's going to bring to us some quick recommendations for similar games, similar roguelike games, I should say. Real quick, we talked a little bit about Rift Wizard 2. I'll mention Stay Tuned and a Half for sure, Path of Acra. We mentioned Doom RL and Jupiter Hell previous episodes. Coming up soon to be released, I believe, is the D-make of Jupiter Hell Classic. Which is kind of a brain bender. And then I guess also maybe Desktop Dungeons ? Which is another kind of very puzzly top-down grid-based rogue game. So check those out. But yeah, I think that's going to wind us down here from our Rift Wizard episode. Emails can be shot to grogpodzone@gmail.com. Our Mastodon is grogpod@gamedev.place, and grogpod.zone is the one-stop shop for everything. Andrew, what are we playing next time?
Another game that I can never remember the name of. We are playing something that is fairly modern in a lot of ways. Came out recently. Very modern aesthetic, controls, presentation. We're talking about Remnant from the Ashes. Number one, a third-person looter shooter with procedurally generated levels. Come on, folks. I think it's gonna be a good time, and hopefully we'll get to get a little bit of three player co-op in, with one person being like the coach walking behind all three of us, like at a esports event. Looking forward to that. I have played this game through about one-ish times the campaign, and I'm looking forward to revisiting it. I think it'll be fun to talk about.
I've never heard of this game.
Indeed. But it looks cool. I keep wanting to call it Revenant.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The one thing that I remember about Remnant was that it was one of our games that we were evaluating of like, what do we play after the great saga that has ended PlanetSide 2? And this, I believe this was pre-Squad. So for listeners that are not in the know, like Squad is our social hangout game with another friend of the show who is not a podcast regular, but 1,200 plus hours that we've collectively, well, more than that, yeah, like, well, I guess 1,200
individually.
in the before Squad times, we were like, what game should we play next? And then I believe Remnant was one of those, like, oh, this looks interesting. It's like a soulsy third person shooter kind of game. This seems interesting. And then, like, once Squad dropped, we were just like, what? There's what other games?
Well, once Squad dropped, Robert insisted we play only Squad forever and ever. So
that's true. Yeah. So if Remnant has a commander view and being able to waste assets on the field, I'll be all in.
For sure.
But until then, that's going to close out our Rift Wizard episode. And to play us out from this one will be some rifty tunes from a shattered universe to lull your little wizard head back to your interrupted nap.